Welcome to Unity Fort Worth Online. We are a spiritual center of love and wisdom, affirming God's presence in our lives and reaching the larger community in ever-increasing circles of good.
We need that storm-calming consciousness, don't we, in a world that seems to be rather crazy at certain times? But life is not what it seems, I believe, that things are very counterintuitive, that what seems to be isn't always the way it truly is. And so I have to dig beneath the surface a little bit. Last few weeks, we've been looking at metaphysical fairy tales. This week, we're back into the Bible, Matthew 20. And it's one of the more difficult passages because people read it and think this is totally unfair. So we'll see what's unfair and we'll see what's fair about it. It's the parable of the vineyard. I was reading about a martial art called Sistema. It was Sistema. The system, I guess, it's from Russia, Russian martial art, and it's based on total relaxation. And I looked at the underlying philosophy. It sounds completely unity. It says, whatever happens to you, good or bad, showed up for your highest development at any given time, right? So therefore, instead of seeing your opponent as a problem, you see them as part of a gift that has come to you. And so it changes your whole strategy of how you fight. Well, we're not interested necessarily in fighting in unity, but we are interested in embrace. And I love the idea that true martial art is about embrace. Well, so is unity. So is the teachings of Jesus that are about embrace. Yeah, it's seeing that, and note this, whatever happens to you, good or bad, is there for your highest development. See, often we can only say that the good, what we label as good, is for our highest development. What do we want to do with the bad? Get rid of it. But in this way of approach, it means that whatever happens, yes, is opportunity for deepening, for understanding what it's like to be more fully alive. Yes? Amen? And this is crucially important in shifting our consciousness. Because if I see that everything that happens to me is a blessing, a gift, or a lesson, then it totally changes the situations that show up. I am no longer resisting them or judging them. Yeah, I am seeing them for something interesting. I shared something with my wife last night. I said we were sitting at on the bank of the lake there at the boat club. She's been sailing this weekend. And we went down there to just sit, and I said, you know, I think it's time for all of us just to be kind to each other and not get all hepped up about stuff, you know, just not be defensive, but just naturally share, if you're spiritually wise, just be chill, you know, relax and enjoy whatever's going on. And then she lost the keys. And we were looking for them for like an hour and a half. We didn't find them, so you had to come back home with me. And then I thought, you know, normally I would get kind of ticked off by an hour and a half of searching. But I thought, Paul, if you're going to put it out there to be kind and be chill, you better live it. You better live it. So I had to fight those urges to say, you silly person, why do you lose your keys? And it totally shifted the situation, though, for me. And she thanked me for not getting upset with her, too. So that was an added bonus. But, you know, if expended a lot of time resisting and being frustrated, I wouldn't have felt good. And we still wouldn't have found the keys. Instead, I felt kind of relaxed. I felt okay. And I felt more loving. And she responded with love. So it was a win-win situation. And we'll work it out. You know, we'll find the keys eventually or we'll use another set of keys. So yeah, that wasn't necessarily the problem. It was just the opportunity. So let's listen to this parable from Matthew 20. And like I say, give me your initial reaction to it. And then we'll see if there's other meanings for this parable. And Jesus is explaining what the kingdom of heaven is like. He said, the kingdom of heaven is like this. So this isn't necessarily literal to the world, the way you should act in the world. It's literal to the way we bring spiritual principles into the world. Kingdom of heaven is like this. There was once a landowner who went out early one morning to hire laborers for his vineyards. About 6 in the morning is when they started work. And after agreeing to pay them the usual day's wage, which was a denarius, which is a silver coin, which was guaranteed to provide for a laborer for the day. Worthy of the day was that pay. So it was the usual day's wage. He sent them off to work. 3 hours later, he went out again and saw some more men standing idle in the marketplace. Come and join the others in the vineyard, he said, and I will pay you a fair wage. So off they went. At midday, he went out again and at 3 in the afternoon and made the same arrangements as before. An hour before sunset, the 11th hour, that's where we get the phrase, the 11th hour. An hour before sunset, he went out and found another group standing there. So he said to them, why are you standing here all day doing nothing? Because no one has hired us, they replied. So he told them, go and join the others in the vineyard. When evening fell, the owner of the vineyard said to the overseer, call the laborers and give them their pay. And this is weird. It says, beginning with those who came last and ending with the first. Those who had started work an hour before sunset came forward and were paid the full day's wage. When it was the turn of the men who had come first, they expected something extra, but were paid the same as the others. As they took it, they grumbled at their employer. These latecomers did only 1 hour's work, yet you have treated them on the level with us, who have sweated the whole day long in the blazing sun. The owner turned to one of them and said, my friend, I am not being unfair to you. You agreed on the usual wage for the day, didn't you? Take your pay and go home. I choose to give the last man the same as you. Surely I'm free to do with what I like with my own money. Why be jealous because I am generous? So the last will be first and the first last. And what's initially problematic about that passage? It's unfair, right? Because somebody's worked all day and has got the same wage as the one who only worked an hour. Is that right? No, not in the world's terms, it's not right. Of course it isn't. And Jesus wants us to feel outraged because he wants us to dig deep into what it's really about, right? He wants to wake us up. He wants to make us think, wait a minute, there's got to be more going on here than some unjust master. And actually, even in the world's terms, he wasn't unjust because he told the first group and the second group and the third group that they would receive a day's wage, and that's what he gave them. But he also chose to give the day's wage to the ones who came at the 11th hour. So, seemingly unjust, right? Even though he followed the letter of the law, what other meaning might there be to this then that's applicable to us today? What's Jesus telling us about the nature of the kingdom and of God? Because who is the landowner in this parable? It's God, right? It's the spiritual principle of truth working in and through this universe and in and through us. Okay. So this principle calls some of us early in the morning, right? Some of us at midday. When were you called? You know, some people were called to the truth as teenagers. Some of us only got it in our 30s or 40s, yes? Some of us maybe got it early and then forgot all about it until the 11th hour when we woke up again and we were spiritually renewed, yeah? So there's different times in our unfoldment, in our life experience, when we come back to this understanding, when we're back on the spiritual path consciously. I wouldn't say back to Jesus because that's an old-timey traditionalist viewpoint. I would say coming back to our truth, to our inner awareness, to the fact that we have the divine within us, yes? So we all come at it at different times. When did you start? I think for me it was, I was a childhood mystic, but then I got through an atheist phase, and then I came to understand some of the truths of the principles in my early 20s, and I've been going on with that ever since. So in that case, 35, 40 years for me on the spiritual path. So do I expect special rewards because I've been on the path for 40 years? Should I expect special rewards? Why not? I've been doing it a long time. I would deserve. I deserve extra. There we go. See, that's what Jesus was saying, isn't it? See, so it's not unfair then that each person gets the same because I'm grateful I'm on the spiritual path. It's not about because I've been doing it 40 years, I deserve extra blessings. I already have my reward, and so therefore it's not about wanting extra. I have everything I need. All right, I'm 40 on the path. How many? Where, somebody just jumped on recently? Okay, so you can expect what then? Dang it.
Bless you.
Yeah, bless you. See, once we get into judging and saying, dang it, or whatever, that, then it's all, it's not about me anymore. You know, it's all about comparing myself to another person. It's not about my spiritual path. It's about how I compare with another. And that's not going to help me at all when we compare things. Just as when we compare one experience that comes is good and the next one is bad, if I divide them and say, well, I only want the good, then I've missed the opportunity, because the universe gives us everything in the right and perfect way, yeah? So if I'm early to the path, great. I get more opportunity to enjoy the fruits, yeah? Enjoy the camaraderie of being on the path with all those people through the day. Whereas the one that comes at the 11th hour is still a neophyte, is still learning, but the reward is still the same. Now, let's ask the question, why is the reward the same then? What is it about God and givingness and generosity? God does not play favorites, right? If Jesus said in another statement in the Sermon on the Mount, God sends the rain and the sun on good and bad alike. God is no respecter of persons. This is really annoying, isn't it? Especially if you feel like you're holy, you know, and better than. And those people, they're not so cool. They're not as developed as I am. But the idea that God showers blessings and love and unconditionality upon them as much as me can be really annoying if I feel like I'm special. So part of the teaching of Jesus is, you're not any more special than anybody else, but we're all incredibly special, yeah? We're all children of God. We're all entertaining angels unawares when we interact with each other, because we're the Christ. We're the expression of divinity. So therefore, if you are that, then you are whole and complete, yeah? Yeah, exactly. Excellent point, because see, God is not changeable in that way. You know, God doesn't respond just because you've done some good stuff. Oh, I'm going to give you extra now. No, God is profligate. God gives unconditionally, period. And nothing needs to be added. That's what we've been talking about in our series on Wednesday night, that once you understand that I don't have to judge, I judge because I compare things, people and situations, fairly or unfairly, but I'm judging. I'm seeing somebody as better than or less than me, and that does nothing but impoverish me, right? But God does not judge in that way, and we are called to act like the divine, right? To let go, and we can only do that when we realize that we have everything we need. Nothing needs to be added. So we go around in life thinking, I don't know, you know, when my ship comes in, then I'll feel better, you know. When that relationship gets solved or whatever, then I'm going to feel better. But the key is, nothing needs to be added. It is already fine. If I can enter that place, then my relationship is automatically transformed, it seems to me, you know? Sure, we go through dry times, we go through difficult times. But when we come home to that realization, then greater joy is available. If I got angry with the key situation, that wouldn't have done anything good for me. It would have impoverished me and my relationship. But instead, staying relaxed nurtured it. So I didn't judge the situation. Can I do that all the time? No. But I can work on it. Is that what you said? It's a great Zen story. We shared it last week in the service. About a man that comes very intent to the master and says, how many years will it take me to become enlightened? And he says, 10 years. So then he said, well, wait a minute. What if I work really, really hard? And the master said, 20 years. counterintuitive again, isn't it? It's the idea that, you know, we expect if we force it and I work hard all day, I deserve more. But the point is sometimes pushing it and trying to push the river, working too hard, trying to force it, makes it a longer experience. We're lengthening the time to enlightenment because we think we have to work so hard at it. When nothing needs to be added, we relax into what is already present. Is your father's good? Yes. Chuckle to that one. That's good. It's your father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. Yeah. There's a story in the Gospels, too, about the last seat, which my late wife really loved. She's one of her 20 points that she had for living well. And the last seat is basically about when you come to a feast, don't go up to the top table, the highest place of honor. Go to the last seat, and then the master will come and invite you up. But if you take the seat at the top, the master may come and say, wait a minute, you're not that cool. Go sit down. So if you take the last seat, you will always be exalted. But if you take the highest seat, there's a chance that you could be put down. Doesn't feel so good. So he's saying be humble, be open, because then good things come to you. If you're an open vessel, you can receive. It's another Zen teaching about that. An American comes to a Zen master, and he knows a whole lot about Zen. He studied in books. And now he's ready to learn something from the master. The master can tell this guy is full of stuff, full of all conceptual ideas. And he says, Master, teach me. I'm willing. I'm ready to learn. And I know so much about it, but I really want to take it even deeper. So the master says, let's sit down and have some tea. So they sit down, and he brews a nice pot of tea. You know, it's done very elegantly, as in the Japanese tradition. And then the master begins pouring the tea into the cup. And he pours till it reaches the brim. And then he pours and he pours until the tea is all over the table, all over the floor, everywhere. And the student thinks the master's gone nuts here. These Japanese people are a little strange. Then the master says, listen, just as the cup, if it's full, cannot contain any more liquid, so your mind, if it's filled with concepts about what's right or wrong or what you think you know, if it's full, I cannot give you anything. You must empty your cup. You must empty your mind. And emptying your mind is to take the last seat, isn't it? It's saying that I'm not expecting anything to happen. Because if you expect, those expectations will hurt you. But if you have no expectations, you're just simply open and receptive, then you can receive great abundance. And so many of us come with expectations about the way it's supposed to be. Yeah? What are some of your expectations you've been carrying around this week? Right, sort of conditionality then. Yeah, you know, I was nice to you. You know, what's the matter with you? But it doesn't always work that way. We can't expect people to be nice just because we are. Yeah, there we go. Okay. You know, I work hard. You know, it's that old 11th hour thing. Those people came in late or whatever, or they didn't work as hard as I did. They don't deserve as much good as I. And I have a right to judge them. Yeah. But that expectation doesn't hurt them. It hurts us. Anything else? What other expectation you've been bringing to the party this week? Okay. And there's nothing wrong with that, to have a desire that you know, to be treated in a right and nice way, but you can't be upset when it doesn't happen. That's the thing. Because we can't force people to be a certain way. We are not dependent upon the way they respond. We are dependent upon our own response to the situation, to any situation, right? I went to a party. No, I don't want to tell this story. It's too upsetting. You expected spring. Oh, Cheryl, it will be soon. Believe me, it'll be very, very warm soon. All right. Last point I want to make is the phrase is used quite a few times in the Gospels. The last will be first, and the first last. And of course, he's speaking to the Pharisees or the scribes, and the holy man who thought they had it all worked out, right? They were the first, and they expected to be first into the kingdom because they did all that was right. The Pharisees, for instance, had 647 laws and rules that they followed. So because they followed the law better than anybody else, they had an expectation they were going to enter the kingdom. And we have churches and denominations that feel like they've got an in on salvation, right? That they're the only ones that are going to heaven. The rest of us are going to hell. I don't know. Somewhere I've heard that phrase. We don't believe in hell ourselves in Unity. But, you know, there's that judgment. And we may, even in our righteousness as new thought, new age type people, we have the same kind of put down, you know, of others that aren't the way we are, that we're more advanced, you know. I know I've studied Eckhart Tolle now. I know the power of now. So I'm way advanced, you know. Deepak and me are real good buddies, you know. So we're going to, we're cool now, whatever. You know, I listen to Oprah faithfully. So I've got a key to the kingdom now. See, we do it wherever we're coming from. So, but what does it mean then for us? The first will be last, and the last will be first. One meaning is the thing you least expect to give you the greatest joy or the greatest learning is the one that does, right? The thing that seems the most unpromising turns out to be the greatest gift. Losing it all can be gaining greater than having stuff, yeah? We learn from our greatest errors and mistakes and failures more than we do if we're in complacency because we've always been given stuff and it's always been ours. So it's counterintuitive in the sense that the last thing can often be the first thing. Anything else? Any other meaning to that phrase? It's a powerful phrase. See, take the last seat because then you become perhaps the first. This is where it gets quiet and we wait and wait and wait. Right. Rolling their eyes at them. Absolutely. Yeah, you know, and that's where we're called to be reborn every day, right? St. Paul talked about this, I die daily. The cosmic Christ in Revelation says, behold, I make all things new. This is why we call ourselves new thought, why this is so powerful, because we are called upon to renew ourselves, yeah? So that, yes, it's an excellent point. Sometimes we could be doing this stuff, it becomes old hat. We become complacent with it, and we have to wake up to freshness every day. I think in a relationship, you have to reinvent your relationship with a friend or with a spouse or a partner over and over so that you maintain that freshness, because otherwise it can get stale, right? There has to be that renewal, that renewed possibility. Same with the relationship with our friends or our colleagues or our school partners or whatever it is. We have to bring not oh yeah, I know you, you're always going to be like that. No, bring an open-hearted idea to the situation, yeah? Because when we do that, things can shift. Because we pick up on vibration more than we pick up on anything else. We pick up on body language. If we are open and receptive and not going to be knocked down by adverse criticism or whatever, things shift, it seems to me. You know, you can only resist that which resists back. When a person refuses to resist and is an open-hearted person, game over, you know, because there's a whole different level being achieved here. This is how to overcome conflict, I believe, to not react at the level of the conflict, right, but to rise up into a higher recognition of what's going on. All right, what have we learned from this passage today that you can apply in your life? That we're all the same, that we all deserve equally. So get over the idea that I deserve more than somebody else. Yeah, not true. Not in God's world. We're all equal. Go ahead. Comparing is suffering. If you want to suffer this week, start comparing. Say it louder so I can. Yes, enter old situations with new ideas, because the last will be first and the first will be last. So you can shift it around. What you least expect can be the greatest gift. Excellent. One more. Interesting. Yes, you do, because it's endlessly renewing. Endlessly renewing. For instance, you have a breakthrough, a great moment of awareness, right? Oh, yeah, I get it. I get that. That's good for today, yeah? But then it doesn't work tomorrow. You have to have an equally good, fresh understanding, right? You can't rest on your laurels, in other words. If you have a good exam result or test result yesterday, that's great. But that doesn't guarantee you're going to have a great one tomorrow, right? You still have to come fresh to the new task at hand. So this is important, to constantly be renewed, absolutely.
There's a visual where I first heard this concept about getting on a bus. If you're the first person on a bus,
right,
you're the last person on that bus.
Uh-huh.
So you think if you're the first person off the bus, you're going to be the first person on the new bus and the last person off that bus.
Uh-huh.
This helps me see this concept and play.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah. And if you lost one hired, you're the first one fired. You know, whatever. That's the world's terms. But in the spiritual terms, yes, it's counterintuitive. And you have you're fired, too. You have greater opportunity, yeah? I was on my radio show this week. This is my final thought, but let's leave it then. On my radio show this week, the person was from Britain, and they were sharing that in Britain, if you fail in a business, you're very less likely to be considered again for a loan or to be encouraged to start again. But she said the statistics in America are different. People think, okay, you failed, you've learned something, and so we will encourage you to try again. And I like that. That's the key to success, right? It's not labeling you, or you failed, therefore we're not going to bother to give you anything anymore. No, it's the idea that, oh yeah, well, failure can be very helpful if you see it aright. It can teach you much about how to do it right the next time. So this is always the way, I think, is don't accept things for the way they seem to be, yes? Be open and receptive to that diamond that's hidden in the rough, that pearl that seems to be clammed shut, but really it's yielding something amazing. That's what this parable yields for me. It's a pretty good parable. There's a lot of wisdom in it. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. This ministry is funded through the generous contributions of individuals just like you. If you have found spiritual enrichment here, please visit us online at www.unityfortworth.org and make a donation. We thank you for your contribution and affirm with you, divine love flowing through us blesses and multiplies all that we give and all that we receive.